Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Will Bauer back in, and Elijah Erbel. Hope you're doing all right. Fantastic weather outside again. Dreaming of golf. We'll talk some golf as the U.S. Open gets rolling. Mike Shewhart, Shuey's 30 minutes away from Wilderness Ridge. Get his take on things. It is a Mike Babcock Wednesday. We'll check in with Babbers in about 15 minutes, and we'll get the lowdown. What's going on at Texas A&M? Is anything going on at Texas A&M? And we'll reach out to one of the top Aggie guys down there with Texas A&M baseball. Scott Clendenin is coming up here. Scott, the play-by-play and color analyst for Aggies baseball. His insight to what's real and imagined with Rob Childress and Will Bolt. Dean Blevins, News 9 and sports animal at Oklahoma City. We'll get him cranked up on the Kevin Durant saga. Durant having Achilles surgery today. And I got a picture of KD in his hospital bed with the oxygen tubes plugged into his nose. And I sent that to Junior. Didn't get a peep back, so the hate is still real for Durant. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Numbers to get in if you want to join the program. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. At Willie Bauer, yay? No, I nailed it. At Willie Bauer for Will Bauer on Twitter. And at Herbal Essences for Elijah Erbel. That's where you go find him on Twitter. Let's start out with some Maurice Washington news. And today was the day that there was supposed to be some sort of movement court-wise with Maurice Washington. What's going to happen with the talented but troubled back for Nebraska? And the answer is not much. Nebraska back Maurice Washington's plea hearing moved to July. So, no resolution in the pending legal case with the Husker running back. That plea hearing against the sophomore pushed back to July 25th. That according to the Santa Clara County Superior Court. Now, Washington wasn't present in court today, and his California appointed public defender, Andres Del Alcazar, appeared and for him to accept the continuance due to pending discovery request. So the new court date's going to fall a week before Nebraska opens fall camp in 2019. More discovery needed. Let's move it back and hurry up and wait is kind of what's going on with Maurice Washington and Nebraska. We'll get into most improved. Phil Steele touched on that with us Monday. And just what it means for Nebraska in just a second. I want to spend a second, though, on Texas A&M, Nebraska, Rob Childress, Will Bolt. Okay, you're waiting for something, some sort of an announcement, right? You're waiting for some sort of movement with the Nebraska coaching situation. Where's Bill Moose at? Where is this process when it comes to Nebraska and specifically the head coaching spot? Where is Nebraska going to go? And you've heard the names. We've been talking about them since Coach Erstad resigned almost 2 weeks ago Monday. Kendall Rogers, inside man, of course, with college baseball, the manager with D1 baseball, is pretty fervent on just what is not going to happen. Okay. What's not going to happen is Coach Childress leaving Texas A&M for Nebraska. That's not shocking news. That's not that unfamiliar news. It's not really that difficult to shake your head at, right? it's a situation here where per Rogers, and he's been working on getting some concrete info soon, there's no official denial or announcement by A&M one way or the other. But Rogers touching on the Rob Childress rumors, false at this juncture. Barring a change of heart, Childress not leaving A&M without being let go and having the Aggies pay a hefty buyout. Okay, you want me to go? Fine, pay me. And we're not even to that point or situation here with the new athletic director, Bork. Bork's a guy that understands the difficulty of winning in the SEC. He's a guy who understands the difficulty of getting to Omaha, because Ole Miss themselves have had great teams and they haven't gotten to the College World Series. So I don't think he's hell-bent on coming in to make a change. What I do know about Rob Childress and his position at A&M, listen, and the Journal Star also reported, you know, Childress is no longer a candidate. Okay, that was reported late yesterday, which it's kind of deflating. If you're a Nebraska fan, you hoped you could pull something off, some magic off, if you're the Moose. And Moose has been phenomenal with getting who he wants and that right person in the head coaching spot at two other major sports. But what I think is the difference right now with Rob Childress, A, I think he wants to succeed down there, and he has succeeded, so I'm not insinuating that he's not done well. He's done damn well down at College Station. But this team's built. They're losing a lot, but they have a lot returning, okay? So they're pretty well stacked for next season. You've got a pipeline of recruits coming in, and I think between the hitting and the pitching, it should mesh up better. That's what's been off. When the hitting's been good, the pitching's not been great, okay? When the pitching's been fantastic due to some injuries, the offense has been off, okay? And I think Coach Childress wants to just stay down there, finish the job, and get a World Series appearance and win for Texas A&M. I think that, when push comes to shove, is it. So where does that leave us with Will Bolt? Where does that leave us with Sealy? Where does that leave us with Deggs? I don't know. Is Bill Moose right now looking at a head coach over an assistant? Well, you've heard Bill Moose's comments before. He wants somebody with head coaching experience. Do you go with Matt Deggs at Sam Houston State over a Will Bolt because of his experience? Sam Houston State had a super regional appearance not long ago. And all of the people we're talking about are disciples of Coach Van Horn. So that's not a bad thing at all. That's a great thing. That's kind of your prerequisite. Yes, you need that checked in ink, right? Highlighted. Need to be a Van Horn guy. That's kind of how I feel about it. The thing that I like about Will Bolt, despite not having Division I head coaching experience, I like that he's learned under Erstad. I like that he's won at Nebraska as a player and as a coach, and I like that he's learned under Rob Childress the last several years. He's perfect. He's the guy you got to go get. Bill Moose is not used to getting or being told no, assuming that the offer was made to Childress and the no thank you. We don't know the exact timeline of it, right? Other than was a call made last week by Bill Moose, probably to Rob Childress. Did Rob Childress think about it a little bit and say, I'm good, thanks anyway? Where are you at now on that next part of the list? Bill Moose doesn't usually have a long list because he gets the first person on the list. Do you go get Will Bolt now? Is that your next move if you're Nebraska and Bill Moose? What's the timeline on this? Something may crank up. Something may heat up here as you have college baseball insiders and royalty descending by Friday in Omaha for the opening ceremonies and be a part of the festivities with an announcement. Get some sizzle there. We'll talk with Mike Babcock a little bit more. Elijah, jump in here if you want. Will you too? And okay, so you're off of Childress. Now what? Is it as clear cut and obvious to go get Will Bolt? I think so, yes. But if you stop for a second and you look at Diggs, that's not a bad option either because of his head coaching experience and what he's done in a short amount of time. He's been at Texarkana. He served under Van Horn at Arkansas, spent time under A&M, went off and did his own thing, got to a super regional. Pretty sweet resume.
I think Moose has shown through his previous hires that he wants people to lead Nebraska that have Nebraska ties. He did that with Coach Frost. He did that with Hoiberg. He did that with the gymnastics coach, Brink. She was a gymnast here. He likes Nebraska people who know Nebraska running the programs. And I think Bolt is the most logical.
The tie outweighs the head coaching or lack thereof head coaching experience.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with you. I agree with you. We'll see if that's where it goes. Let's get to some college football thoughts. Can join us 466-377-6800-825-5865. Now, the mantle of most improved, Phil Steele is very selective with who he thinks is going to be the most improved team in college football. Puts a lot of effort, a lot of research into it. He told us on Monday that he has Nebraska as the most improved team in college football. So if Nebraska was 4-8 last year, yes, they were. Does that mean they're a 10-3 squad? Does that mean 9-4? Does that mean 9-3? Is that 8-4? Is that 7-5? Don't know. I can talk myself into double-digit wins on paper. I don't know that they're ready for that yet. I think they're good enough to do that. But I just don't know that they're ready to skip a step of a growing pain loss here or there, right, when it comes to treating them all the same and not overlooking somebody from a team maturity standpoint. You had Florida as the team that was pegged to be the most improved team in 2018, and Coach Mullins, 10-3, phenomenal. They were really good. And their offense, Florida's not had a quarterback really since Tebow, to be honest with you. And now they got Mullen down there, 10-3. Florida was kind of back, so to speak. Not close to the Spurrier years, but better. They went from 4-7 to 10-3. Notre Dame made the jump from 4-8. A lot of close losses for the Irish in 2016. In 2017, they went 10-3. Texas fumbled mightily in 2016 when they were projected. Really, Illinois and Texas are the two teams that Phil Steele's picked to be the most improved that had the door slammed in their face. Everywhere else, he's been right. And the teams have had really good years to the tune of division championships or better. And he picked TCU a few years back in 2014, their first year into the Big 12. They had a little bit of a rough awakening or a rough welcome at 4-8. That TCU went 12-1. All right. So he has Nebraska. We don't know the record, the win-loss yet. But he has Nebraska as most improved. Where are you at as a Nebraska fan when it comes to agreeing with this? Yeah, do you think Nebraska will be the most improved team in college football? I think they can be. I think they can double up for sure the 4 wins to 8. But what areas? And if I had to pick some parts of this football team as we look at it as to why they'll be most improved, listen, you start with your quarterback in Adrian Martinez, year two. He's already played a lot of big road games and performed well. The next step is to win those. He's played well enough to win, but he can't play the other 20 positions, right? Team effort, but he's the trigger man. Defensively, that's kind of where I'm a little bit more optimistic. I think from your back four, your secondary, you feel pretty good about, especially how they've kind of grown and gotten better. I don't know how deep you are. And anywhere across the board, you can't have injuries. Anywhere in the back seven, for sure, right? But I think your secondary could be really good. I think you're going to have a hell of a good defensive line this year. I think they're going to be much, much better against the run, first and foremost. That's how you're going to win in the Big Ten. That's how you're going to find a way to beat an Iowa or Wisconsin for the first time in a while is by stopping their run and then getting after the quarterback. My big question mark is is offensive line, and we're talking two-thirds of the offense, right? We're talking offensive line and wide receivers. What type of contribution are you getting from your grad transfer, Noah? He's a guy that's just joined the team. He has performed in Pac-12 play. He's a guy that needs to be another option with JD, all right? What are you going to get from Wandale? What are you going to get from Woodyard? What are you going to get from Williams? The wideouts are going to be key because you've got the quarterback now. You got to help your quarterback out. I think the run game will be better. That center spot and the guard spot, I think, can be okay, but it's their first rodeo. A couple of those guys' first rodeo. It's not automatic.
Last year, it was a lot of downhill running, especially with Devine. We had some big guys in the middle. We had Foster. We had Farmer. Mm-hmm. And this year, I think it's going to be a lot more about stretching side to side. You got Mills who can take it up the middle, but then you got Martinez threat on the outside. It's going to be a lot more about spreading those backers from side to side and then making them come downhill and stop the run.
That'd be good. You know, you get a guy like Mills to pop it up the middle, let Adrian run up the gut a little bit. Nebraska will have to make some money between the tackles. Don't kid yourself. They prefer to go to the edge. Teams know that. Be good up the gut. So as far as elements to back up the claim most improved, it's there for Nebraska to be better defensively. What can they bring on offense? Mike Babcock will join us. Mike Shewhart's on the way. Great to be with you on a Wednesday with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt and Will Bauer, Elijah Erbel. Mike Babcock, historian, author, Hall of Famer, 43 years of Nebraska football coverage. You follow Mike on Twitter at MDBabs, and you'll read him with the Hail Varsity magazine. Yearbook is en route, almost wrapped up. That is pretty cool. Babbers, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, and there's no truth to the rumor that I'll be taking over that head coaching job.
Well, that's where we'll start, Babbers, because you've been kind of sitting on, all right, man, when's this going to happen? And you got to take your time and find the right guy. You've got a lot of guys from the Van Horn coaching tree right there to be talked to, and you're just waiting on the word, right? You're waiting on word from the Moose and see where it's at. Coach Childress, not in the running anymore. I don't know if he ever was, if there was a consideration, if there was an offer. I assume there was an offer, yes, but you've got a good thing going at A&M. Now you've got an interesting question here. If you're Nebraska's athletic director, do you go with a guy like Will Bolt, who has experience, understands Nebraska, knows how to scout Nebraska, or do you go with a guy that's also a Van Horn disciple in Diggs at Sam Houston State? There's other coaches to choose from, too, obviously, but Diggs has done well, and he's done well recently. How do you weigh in on this, Mike, with Nebraska's next move with baseball? And from a timeline standpoint, what are you feeling?
Well, you know, what I thought was that that Bill Moose would announce a hire in conjunction with the College World Series to get some sort of boost from that. You know, maybe it's not that far along. Maybe the process isn't that far along. And, you know, I had people telling me, oh, I have it on good authority that it's going to be Childress, and that's, you know, he's just waiting to, Moose is just waiting to make that announcement, and then, you know, it's going to be Childress, and then it wasn't going to be. No, there's no way that's going to happen. You know, his contract goes through 2021 and all that sort of thing. So, you know, I don't dismiss anything as a possibility, but I, you know, I thought from the beginning, even though Bill Moose said that, you know, head coaching experience seemed to be one of the considerations in what he would do, that I thought, you know, I thought that Will Bolt would be a logical choice for that position. You mentioned Diggs. He was an assistant under Van Horn, also an assistant associate head coach, I think, under Childress.
Right.
And Jay Sirianni is one of his assistant coaches, former Husker, now at Sam Houston State. So there's some connection there, obviously. So that's I'm sure that's a possibility. Justin Seeley is at Texas A&M. He's a recruiting coordinator, I think, for Childress down there, and has done a really good job from a recruiting standpoint, which we know how important that is. We know that Bolt has some connections here. But again, for me, I go back to Will Bolt. You know, he was here as an assistant coach, associate head coach, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the state. Texas A&M still recruits in Nebraska, which would be a plus for Sealy, I guess, but also for Bolt. To me, that was just, you know, that Will Bolt was the name that immediately came to mind when Darren announced that he wouldn't be coming back as head coach. But again, I qualify that because Bill Moose indicated that he was looking for somebody that had head coaching experience, at a major college. I think that was part of it as well. But, these things change, who's available, who's interested, who has connections and so forth. And, you know, Bill Moose is two for two. He's shown us that he knows what he's doing. But I think that's why the initial flood of excitement about Rob Childress, you know, was just there was an assumption, well, you know, Bill Moose hired Scott Frost. He hired Fred Hoiberg, so he's going to go hire Rob Childress. And that's apparently not going to be the case.
How's the Moose taking a no, if there is a no? he's not been told no.
Well, you know, maybe he hasn't asked the question. You know, maybe that was never a consideration for him. Maybe he did his he did his due diligence. He evaluated things, and maybe he didn't really look into it. Because again, you know, Childress, I don't know. His salary there is what?
$800,000.
At one point, I thought I'd read somewhere that it was a little over $800,000, but seems to be in that range, about $750,000. And again, his contract goes through 2021, so you know maybe that wasn't even a discussion. I don't know, that you're talking about a lot of money. If that's the case, if there would happen to be a buyout involved in that as well, there's a lot of money there.
Yeah.
Involved and that's going to be a consideration as well. And I know it has, you know, if Bill Moose gets the right guy, he's going to pay the money to get him. So, it's an interesting thing, and it's a great discussion point. But I think as we found to this point, we don't have a real good end to what Bill Moose is thinking until he decides to let us know what it's going to be.
Mike Babcock's with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, at MD Babs on Twitter is where you follow Mike. Mike, let's talk a little college football preview, and your book's coming out with Hail Varsity. Had a chance to talk with Phil Steele. Nebraska's pegged as the most improved team in college football, and that's quite a endorsement based on what history says with Phil's research. We were talking about this before break, as to, you know, kind of where I thought Nebraska is going to be improved, and I lean defensively and I lean quarterback to one entire side of the ball and one big time playmaker and leader. I wanted your thoughts here as to kind of a, I don't want to say under the radar position, but offensive line and wideouts, right? The skill spots and then the trenches. Are you confident that those units can make the necessary jumps to kind of live up to this this hype of being the most improved team in college football?
Well, and we've talked about this before, Smitty. It's amazing to me, but even after last season, Nebraska is probably the most respected 4-8 team in the country. I mean, I can't remember too many teams that went 4-8, and then everybody was all excited. You know, it's like, wow, this team, it's going to be the most improved. There certainly is room for improvement there coming off 4-8. But those two areas that you mentioned, yeah, offensive line. And here's the interesting thing, and it's no great insight here, but, Cam Jurgens, how does he fit at center? You know, how does he continue his development? Because by the end of spring, he told us that he was up to 280, And he still had the athleticism that that Nebraska recruited him as a tight end. So can he make that adjustment to center, which is important to obviously how your offensive line plays, depends a good deal on that the guy in the middle. And then you've got the other guard position. Trent Hickson seemed to solidify that a little bit by the end of spring. So you can probably put five guys on the field in the offensive line that you feel pretty good about. The question is whether you can develop to the point in the offensive line that you can rotate some guys. I think that's the key there. Can you rotate some guys in there so you're not just playing five guys the way, Kavanaugh, that was his thing, was sure. We're going to play the five best guys, and they're going to play, and that's it, and they're going to take the snaps in practice. And I think you have to do it a little bit differently, and I think that's the way Frost and Greg Ostern are looking to do it.
Babbers, want to get your reaction to Wandale Robinson's situation. You have the hearing for Maurice pushed back to the end of July, obviously, but you also have a week ago Tuesday the Maurice Washington paraphernalia stuff, and you've seen a lot of Nebraska football. Concerned with some of this off the field stuff?
Well, yeah, it's always a concern. I mean, from a team standpoint, it's a concern because you come in, you're a second year coach, and you want to build this. You have standards, but that's one of the things that Derek Peterson's story in the yearbook, is going to provide insight into how these things need to be handled. Here's the thing: this team has to get to the point at which other players on the team are holding these guys accountable, so that it doesn't happen. That's the thing that you have. It has to be. It can't just be the coach saying we don't do these kind of things. Mm-hmm. It has to be teammates. And if you look at Nebraska's the most successful teams, the one I think of most dramatically, Grant Wistrom and Jason Peter, the two of the co-captains on that '97 team, held everybody accountable. There was no way you were going to step out of line with those two guys as captains. They took that responsibility seriously, and they both came back for their senior year when they might have had an opportunity to go to the NFL. And that's where it has to come from. It has to come from the other players on the team saying, look, we don't do this stuff. We don't do this stuff. You guys, you have to be accountable. And that's the thing that I think the program is still moving in that direction. Maybe from the standpoint of this particular team. But I think by the end of last season, they had that kind of attitude. And again, I won't get too far into it, but Derek Peterson did a really nice job with a story in the yearbook that sort of explains how this needs to be handled.
Babber's got a minute. I need you to tell me what your Warriors are going to do in Game 6.
I think they're probably going to lose.
That's not very supportive.
Well, you didn't ask me what I wanted them to do.
Your tone was like, oh, damn, they're done.
Hey, I think Toronto is the better team. Okay. I really do think Toronto's the better team. I think Golden State's bench is not that strong offensively. You can't get points off the bench. And I'm not sure that even if Durant had been able to play, that Toronto was not the better team.
Gotcha. Mike, you're awesome, man. Fun to talk some football. And we'll be seeing how your Warriors do on Thursday night. We'll get caught up next week. Take care, and thanks for your input today.
Hey, go Warriors. I still say it.
There we go. Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Little golf talk. Mike Shewhart coming up with Hail Varsity.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Will Bauer is in, and Scott Clendenin is going to join us in about 20 minutes. He is there down in College Station at Texas A&M. The word from him on Will Bolt, on Childress, what's moving forward, if anything, with Nebraska baseball. That's in 20 minutes. Dean Blevins will sound off on the new Oklahoma commit that Nebraska was in for at defensive tackle out of Iowa Western, and some KD thoughts from Mr. Blevins. We say hi to Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey, I say this with all due respect, playing at the Lincoln Ortho Open on Friday, brother, your greens are evil.
You think?
Oh,
they're, better be on the right side of the hole.
Well, no kidding. I didn't have any Amen juice. It's probably part of my problem.
That's right.
Brother,
but have that.
What a good time it was. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You are in the sunshine. You are giving lessons. You're getting caught up with folks. And I know them Divot Dogs are busy. We'll hear about you, about the Divot Dogs in a second. I want to talk about the U.S. Open. My buddy Iowa Russ is out at Pebble taunting with every tweet with scenic beauty and wonderful pictures. We got to talk U.S. Open, and I got to start with Tiger. And what Tiger do you think shows up this weekend?
I think he'll have a good Tiger this weekend. I think he's feeling better. The course he's very familiar with. It is definitely a course that you need some. The California guys will have a little bit of an advantage out there because it's different, man. You got seaside, poana grass, and it's a very different animal to play on. So if you're not used to it, it'll be tough for some of those guys. You know, Phil, Tiger, bunch of those California guys that grew up out there, they know how to play on that stuff a little bit better.
What's Pebble like? Can you describe it?
No, man, it's unbelievable. It's a golf course they built in 1920 that we can't even come close to duplicating today with the technology. Back then they had horses and wagons and they built that golf course. You know, it's incredible. It has some of the most beautiful views. The greens are so small, it's amazing. I mean, TV does them no justice. They're tiny. They got the rough up. They're not going to play it very long, but don't let that deceive you because you're playing at sea level, man. The ball goes nowhere down there. So that 7,000 yards plays pretty long.
What do you got to be able to do at Pebble to survive it? I mean, you can tell me about length, or you can talk about rough, or you can hit on, you know, putting for the dough, but what skill set ultimately needs to show through?
You got to get it in the fairway. I mean, you got to get it in the fairway because the greens are so small that, you know, and especially with the rough that I've seen they have out there, man, it's just not that easy to just get the ball on the green. So you got to get it in the fairway. And putting is going to be different because to me, it's a little bit, the greens are not very good. You know, they're just hard to putt because they're bumpy. So you're not going to see a lot of guys making a ton of putts, you know? So it's like, it's par is going to be a good score. So you got to get it in the fairway to get it on the green. If you get it on the green, I mean, you'll have some, a lot of looks and legitimate looks just because the greens aren't that big.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're not very easy to make putts on. They're just not smooth like what you are used to around here.
Mike Shewhart's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Shuey, what does Koepka do for an encore here? Can he get three in a row?
He could. I mean, he's playing really good, but I don't. He'll play okay. I don't think he'll win. I think Dustin Johnson's going to win, and I think he wins going away. I think he wins by six.
Wow, there's your shot called by Mike Shewhart. Why DJ?
Because he drives it long but straight. He's a great iron player, and putting is always a premium, but it again, because guys aren't going to be able to just go make putts all over the place. Mm-hmm. You hit a lot of good putts that don't go in, so putting's not his strongest suit, but he's a good short putter, and he's going to two-putt a lot, but he's going to hit more greens. He's going to have more opportunities. I mean, and he's just ready. I mean, he's been there too many times. So, and he plays good there. So I like him a lot this week.
Phil's wanting this one bad. He's wanted it his whole career. Talk to me about Lefty here and his chance this weekend, home course. And when it comes to Phil, what's his strategy got to be like?
Well, Phil's always going to be tough, especially there, because he knows it. I mean, he's a Southern California guy, so he knows that. So Phil's whole key is, which driver can he get in the fairway? Because he's got two in the bag this week, which is an unusual strategy, but he's got two drivers, his long driver and his short driver. I hope one of them's a straight driver.
Don't we all?
Right? That's right.
Shuey, a little shout-out to your Divot Dog. Give us an update.
Yeah, man. We had our first competition last week, and my team one and team two, they actually tied for first.
Hmm.
Oh, and then tomorrow we go to Firethorn and play at the resort course out there, so our second tournament of the year, and they're see if we can get two in a row. We're doing great. I got a good, solid little team this year, so it's going to be fun.
So Wilderness versus Firethorn, is it similar to like Nebraska, Oklahoma? I won't make you declare who's who.
No, not even close. It'd be more like Nebraska against Weber State.
Oh, wow. You're feeling it, man. I love it.
Does Weber State even have a football team?
They did at one point.
Well, that's right. That's why, because we beat them up so bad, they had to get rid of the program.
Man. Shuey. Dropping some grenades. I love it.
That's right.
Shuey, we'll get out of here on this. You called DJ to win the U.S. Open. Who else is out there that you feel good about if folks want to take some advice from you?
I got two other guys I really like. Adam Scott, because he's played really well this year, and he's a ball striker. And, I think he'll have a good week. And I really like Matt Kuchar.
Okay.
Because he hasn't won, man, and he's ready to win a major. And I keep thinking he's going to get that one. Right when people think he's, not going to get it, that's a lot of times when guys get it. Another one that nobody's talking about is Jordan Spieth. He's kind of fallen off. I look for him to have a little resurgence this week.
Okay. Mike Shuart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Can go see Shuey out at Wilderness, get some lessons. The youth program's phenomenal with Shuey's Divot Dogs. Yet the inflatable shark out there that may not bite, but he'll entertain. Shuey, we'll talk to you next week, buddy. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me. Always enjoy it.
Take care, brother. There he is, yeah. Mike Shuart, Wilderness Ridge. Gotta love Shuey. And them greens out there were undefeated. They were tough. They were tough. We'll wind down hour one. Thoughts on the A&M and Van Horn coaching tree coming up next hour.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back to you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Will Bauer, Elijah Erbel. And we'll get to some thoughts here on Steve Kerr in just a moment. He's met the media today. Dean Blevins, our resident KD expert, many years covering KD and OKC. We'll check in with Dean Blevins in hour two. Also, the latest and some insight here on what's going on with A&M and Nebraska and Childress and Will Bolt and Scott Clendenin will join us in 10 minutes. So from the horse's mouth, so to speak, it's not Coach Childress or Will Bolt, but someone who rode a lot of buses with him will provide some insight. Here is Steve Kerr on the Durant injury, the situation, and the heartache associated with it in this hindsight game we keep playing in the world of sports.
This last month was a cumulative, collaborative effort in his rehabilitation. And that collaboration included Kevin and his business partner, Rich Kleinman, our medical staff, his own outside opinion, second opinion doctor outside of our organization. And Kevin checked all the boxes, and he was cleared to play by everybody involved. Now, would we go back and do it over again? Damn right. But that's easy to say after the results. When we gathered all the information, our feeling was the worst thing that could happen would be a re-injury of the calf, and that was the advice and the information that we had. And at that point, once Kevin was cleared to play, he was comfortable with that. We were comfortable with that. So the Achilles came as a complete shock. And, I don't know what else to add to that other than had we known that this was a possibility, that this was even in the realm of possibility, there's no way we ever would have allowed Kevin to come back. So it's devastating, mostly for Kevin, obviously, but I feel horribly for Rick as well, Celebrini, who is one of the best people I've ever been around, and one of the smartest, brightest minds that I've ever been around.
So that is Steve Kerr, open session with the media today, and we'll get Dean Blevins' take on Durant's injury history and just what type of risk was posed. A reminder about buckling up. Speaking of injury, seatbelts prevent excessive injury. Airbags aren't enough. And when push comes to shove, you want your body to slow down. Get buckled up today. Whether you're in the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat, buckle up now, click it or ticket. A reminder and a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. So some more thoughts on the Nebraska baseball opening as we are still waiting on the who and the when. When will Bill Moose get his guy, Scott Clendenin, part of the Aggie Radio Network, color and play-by-play man for the Aggies, going to join us, give us the lowdown on this Van Horn, Childress, Bolt tree that Nebraska may pick from. Dean Blevins next hour, hour two coming up.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back to you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. And let's figure out what's happening with Nebraska baseball in reference to Texas A&M. Scott Clendenin is part of the Aggie Radio Network, play-by-play man and color analyst. Scott, welcome into Hail Varsity. Thanks for a few minutes. How's your day?
Oh, it's great. It's a great time of year here for college baseball fans with the College World Series right around the corner, and a lot more intrigue, obviously, with what's going on with the surprise resignation. And it obviously turns the focus to Texas A&M with the ties and the coaching tree from Dave Van Horn that has kind of permeated through Texas baseball, not just the Texas A&M, Sam Houston, lots of focus on guys that are in the Dave Van Horn coaching tree, so not a big surprise there.
Scott, where do you think things are at in reference to Coach Childress, to Will Bolt, to Seeley? I mean, just go down the list. You mentioned the Van Horn tree. Those names I just listed, very important to a golden era of Nebraska baseball. It's been quiet. There's been a little smoke. Now quiet again. What do you know?
I think that Coach Childress, obviously firmly entrenched here at Texas A&M. I know the critics of the successful level that he's built are based on the fact that the success in Omaha has not been there. I understand that. No one understands that more than Rob Childress. We've talked about that numerous times, but I really think that what he's built at Texas A&M, the team that he has coming back, what's in the pipeline as far as recruiting. I just think that, that is a situation where it would frankly shock me if Rob Childress left for Nebraska. I think it would have shocked me if Dave Van Horn left for Texas A&M when he was approached about the A&M job when Mark Johnson was let go. But Bill Byrne, having the ties that he had to Dave Van Horn, talked with him about the coaching job, and then also talked with him about Rob Childress and what he would bring to the program because, you know, quite frankly, you had two head coaches when Dave Van Horn left. I know one guy had head coach on the door and another one was associate head coach, but Coach Anderson and Coach Childress were the two guys running that program after Coach Childress left and really some of the pipeline to Texas dried up. It changed Nebraska baseball as much, I think, as going to the Big Ten was the fact that, you know, a guy with ties to Texas wasn't there. And I could understand wanting to rebuild that and having, you know, from the faraway eyes looking and see there's Rob Childress, there's Will Bolt, Justin Seeley. They've been able to do that at Texas A&M. And actually, they've turned the pipeline around and headed back up to the Midwest to get a select handful of players to come down and play at Texas A&M from Nebraska, from Kansas. So it's kind of the same thing in reverse, kind of supplementing what they would get in the state of Texas. And it's perfectly understandable that Nebraska fans would look at that and say, hey, that's something we want to emulate. We want to try to put the band back together a little bit and see if we can have the same success. I think Michigan going to the College World Series probably exasperates that because now somebody can say, there's a Big Ten team. This is the second time in like 10 years that Big Ten is able to be at the College World Series. And really, I think that's good for college baseball because it takes all that. We need to have a Northern College World Series and a Southern College World Series and kind of turns it on its head when you see the Midwest, the North, and the Northwest able to have teams in the College World Series and champions. So I understand how Nebraska wants to put that together. Again, with Rob Childress, I think what he's got here is very, very strong. Now, I also think that Will Bolt loves Nebraska. We've talked about it time and time again. I understand he is in the, you know, the all-time greats as far as one of being the most beloved players that played for the Cornhuskers. And I can understand that he is in, you know, if you're not going to go out and get a head coach to come in, I don't think there's any other assistant coach in the country that would fit what Nebraska wants to do more than Will Bolt. And I understand that, you know, there's grumblings about the offense that basically he's been in charge of this year. I think injuries and some defections to the major league draft really hurt what A&M's had the last couple years in offense. I still look back to when he had a full roster of healthy players. The offense that Will Bolt put out there looked like what Dave Van Horn did at Nebraska and Arkansas. Look like what Matt Deggs did at Texas A&M, Louisiana Lafayette, and is continuing at Sam Houston State. That coaching tree and offensive philosophy fits with what Nebraska wants to see happen again, and I think Will Bolt would be ready to implement that at Nebraska in short order.
Well, and the thing with Will, and he was here to build it, and then it exploded. But he also, I don't mean to term it this way, but did some time in the Big Ten, right? I mean, what a jump from the Big 12 to the Big Ten. The Big Ten's kind of found their legs now, as you mentioned, with a couple of CWS appearances, one from Indiana, one from Michigan. So there's more of a priority on it, thankfully. With Will, take me back to his move to A&M. And Will was kind enough to be on with us whenever he could when he was at Nebraska. But I know he's a Texas kid. I know he has family down there. But he's also been very patient. He's had a head job as a JUCO head coach, I know. But he went back with Rob to get groomed for a head coaching opportunity. It makes perfect sense for him, that next step, whenever it is, to be a head coach somewhere. Is he going to be picky about that opportunity, would you think? If it's not Nebraska, he'll stay with A&M, presuming that the offer is out by Nebraska. Do you believe an offer's out from Nebraska?
I honestly think that is a dream job for Will Bolt to be the head coach at Nebraska. He was on the short list along with Matt Deggs, who I talked about when David Pierce left Sam Houston State and went to Tulane. You know, I was told at the time that he was on the short list for that. It went to Matt Deggs, someone else in that coaching tree. Had tremendous success, the first mid-major coach to take the Southland and one of these Texas leagues that's not the Big 12 or the SEC to take a team to Super Regional where they played lights out against Florida State. So he's been groomed for that. I mean, I think that you see Andy Sawyers that was here and then went to, took the step to go back to Kansas State before getting a head job. I think that if Nebraska came along and offered Will Bolt a chance, I would be surprised if he didn't take it. That's my personal opinion, thinking that I know how the ties are to the two programs that he wanted to be at was Texas A&M and Nebraska. I don't think you turn down the head job in Nebraska if you're an assistant at Texas A&M. And I think that, you know, that is what he has been building for. And I think that, you know, he would have the endorsement of Rob Childress. He would have the endorsement of Dave Van Horn. He would have the endorsement of the people that he has been around that understand what it takes to win in that situation. If you're not going to go out and get a head coach that doesn't have ties to that area, I think then you would have to refocus on getting somebody that does know the culture, what it takes to win there, what it takes to, you know, make the trips all over Nebraska and to see the kind of kids in American Legion ball, which a lot of people aren't really familiar with outside of that area. It's not high school ball. It's a different situation to even evaluate players. And I think that he fits that mold as having that in his background. That would open up the door. So I would think that he would be the top assistant coach on any list to be the head man at Nebraska.
Scott Clendenin with us, part of the Aggies Radio Network, color analyst, play-by-play man for Texas A&M. Some insight on Rob Childress, some insight on Will Bolt joining us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Let's get into expectations at Texas A&M for the baseball program. How long has Mr. Bork been at the wheel? I know he came from Ole Miss. Are we talking a month?
It's a month, basically, and he really hasn't taken over as acting athletic director. As R.C. Slocum, his former football coach here, has been kind of handling the day-to-day thing. I've talked about this on the radio yesterday. He is a professional athletic director. He's been through this before. He's seen the ups and downs and how hard it is to win in the SEC by being the athletic director at Ole Miss. Now, you look at Mike Bianco, who, you know, right this just this last week lost a super regional to Arkansas. That's the second super regional that he's been to that he didn't go to the College World Series. So one College World Series, two super regionals, didn't go to the playoffs one year, a couple 0-2 showings in regional play. Bork has been through that. He understands the expectations. When you're in the SEC, it's a College World Series. That's why there's four teams there right now, and all the other outspoken people in the fan bases all across the SEC. And the other 10 schools are saying, why can't we be one of those four? You know, 2 years ago, Kentucky was the flavor of the month. Now they didn't even make the NCAA tournament. Why can't we be one of those teams? The pressure in this league to go to the College World Series is different from any other league, because I think that you're expected, if you can go to the SEC tournament, that you're good enough to go to the NCAA tournament and you're good enough to win regionals and super regionals to go to the College World Series. Auburn shows that this year as being the sixth place team in the West doing that. But it takes luck. It takes the right breaks in regional play. Sometimes it takes an upset on the other side of the bracket to where you get to host at home to make those runs happen. You know, I think that, you know, one of the things about Texas A&M is TCU has a history of being at the College World Series recently. Rob Childress is compared to that when TCU has knocked Texas A&M twice out of super regional play and once out of Omaha. Texas has a history. Texas Tech is building a history right now, four appearances in the last 6 years. It's not the same in those leagues to go to the College World Series when you don't play the same week in and week out 30-game grind, or 16-14 is capable of you being a top 10 team in the country and fourth or fifth place in either the East or the West, depending on which side of the SEC is strongest that year. That's a lot of pressure. That's a different kind of pressure. And it leads to criticism when you don't go to the College World Series. It leads to criticism when you go to the College World Series and you don't have a long run. I think Rob Childress understands that. He's been through this before. He's trying to build a team that can go and win the College World Series, and that's been his focus since he's been here. He's been close a couple times. This team was a little out of balance to being very, very good on the mound and not having the hitting this year. A couple years ago, due to some injuries and some ineffectiveness, the hitting was there and the pitching was good but not great, and great was what it was going to take to win two super regionals against TCU. So I think that, you know, the pressure that comes at Texas A&M is a lot like the pressure that comes at other places, including Ole Miss, where Bork was just athletic director. And I think that from everything I've been told is he gives the coaches what they need to succeed. And then if you can't succeed, then changes are made. I think Rob Childress is going to be given the tools in the toolbox to make a run, and that, you know, it would be more of consistency with how he treated baseball at Ole Miss than having a big change coming to Texas A&M.
Scott, a couple more minutes, and thanks for your insight. Let's preview the CWS. It's got Mississippi State, LSU, Arkansas, Auburn, the SEC Invitational, right, known as the College World Series. Of course, you got Florida State in the mix as well. Just heartbreak a year ago for Arkansas. Who do you think can get out of Omaha alive from the SEC? Are you circling this is the year for Arkansas? Do you look at LSU? Do you like Mississippi State? Auburn's been phenomenal. Where are you at with these four squads making up half the field of the CWS?
Well, I think that it certainly helps Arkansas to be in bracket one and be on the opposite side of the three other SEC teams. But I also think they get Florida State, who's playing on an emotional high right now, playing for Coach Mike Martin, his last chance to go win the College World Series, and they've been terrific. They eliminated Georgia because they were ahead of Georgia most of those games. They eliminated LSU because they were ahead and then tied when they were the home team. If Arkansas being the can get on top of Florida State early, you can see a little bit of air coming out of that balloon. And I think when it comes out of the Florida State balloon, it's going to pop. So I think that, you know, they've got to get ahead early. Michigan played very, very well at UCLA. UCLA had not lost a series all year long, a weekend series. So to go to UCLA and win that series, very impressive. Texas Tech, a hard-fought three-game match with Oklahoma State, two teams that knew each other very, very well. I would think Arkansas would be the favorite to come out of bracket one. Bracket two, seen Vanderbilt. First series of the year, A&M took two or three from them like they did Arkansas at the end of the year. Kumar Rocker's a lot better pitcher now at the end of his freshman season than what he was at the beginning of his SEC season. I saw that with the no-hitter last week. I think they have to be the favorite, but Louisville was dominant over East Carolina. Mississippi State and Auburn. Mississippi State took care of Auburn during the regular season. They have a veteran team that's back from being at the College World Series as well last year. So I just think that, you know, I would think that Vandy and Mississippi State would probably play in the bracket two final. And, you know, I don't know who would be on the other side of the bracket final across from Arkansas. But I think three of the final four teams, you know, very easily could be from the SEC. That being said, Michigan and Louisville would just be – how appropriate would that be if that was the College World Series final and just throw everybody for a complete loop? That's the best thing about this game is on every given weekend, on any given week, one pitcher can take away all the momentum an offense has and completely turn college baseball upside down. But I would be surprised if the champion was not out of the SEC this year.
I would be surprised as well. Scott Clendenin with us, part of the Texas A&M Radio Network play-by-play and color analyst for Aggie Baseball. Scott, we'll do this again. Thanks for your insight and time today.
Oh, no problem, and have a great College World Series. Quite frankly, not being up there, you know, this time of year is a disappointment for Aggie fans and Aggie broadcasters because we love going to that tournament and having everything that goes on around it. I can't wait to get back up there as soon as possible.
Thanks so much, Scott. Scott Clendenin, good insight there on just what Childress would be thinking and the direction to go with Bolt. Deggs also mentioned very prominently. We'll hear from Dean Blevins on recruiting. A reminder about WestBlueRealty.com. They specialize in moving residential homes in Lincoln and surrounding areas. Give your friends at WestBlue a call today. Tom Luby at 402-540-3768 or Tom Hofschneider, Kelly Hofschneider at 402-202-2312. You mentioned Hail Varsity, $1,000, up to $1,000 off the closing of that next home purchase. West Blue Realty.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes, that's awesome.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Love talking with one of my favorite people, Dean Blevins, with us, News 9 in Oklahoma City. Sports Animal down in Oklahoma City. You follow Dean on Twitter, at Dean Blevins. We talk a lot of NBA. Dean, just tragic for Kevin Durant. You covered Kevin forever when he was down in Oklahoma City, and you've been plugged into the NBA for a while. What's your reaction to what happened with Durant injury-wise? Man, just your thoughts.
Good to be with you again, and be speaking with the Nebraskans. Well, a couple of immediate thoughts. Number one, Steve Kerr, after the game, telling Rachel Nichols over and over, he said, but they told me that this wasn't going to happen, that there's this couldn't happen. And he kept repeating that, meaning that, you know, he felt, and Steven even said before the game, that the worst case scenario would be that he could tweak the calf injury, but that this didn't increase any likelihood of affecting the Achilles. So in the process, somewhere, someone was either misdiagnosing it, which is hard to believe because there are so many people looking at it, or someone was misleading. And I believe that if Kevin Durant believes someone misled him, then he's out of there, and it's a travesty. But if he can't, and you know, they're spinning everything, if he can't determine that he, or if he believes he was not misled, I think he's going to resign and stay there. I think it does make some sense. But, you know, Chris, my history with Kevin goes back to when he first came here, and certainly during some tornadoes, we had to get a lot of things together. And so I know the guy reasonably well. I'm not a big fan. He turncoat and all that when he left here. I'm really angry about that still. But you would never wish this upon anyone. My thinking on this thing is there was no possible way this guy should have been out there, and I've been saying it ever since he was injured. Chris, he had 3 foot surgeries, and I'm talking deep toward the heel, just mere inches from this calf injury. He had 3 surgeries that put him out for the season in 2014 and 2015. He had 3 surgeries within 6 months, and then he has his calf injury. That part of his foot and leg were so compromised, there was no way this guy needed to be out there doing that. If he was in a, if his profession was dart throwing, yeah, he can do it. But not a spontaneous required sport where you're having to, he was in a controlled environment. I'm sure that you were impressed as I was the way they were using him there in that first quarter. All that's fine and dandy. But in a basketball game, you're going to have spontaneous explosiveness needed. That's where you get injured. And so that should have never, never, never happened. It's a tragedy.
Aside from his height, obviously being the matchup nightmare for about everybody, his athleticism, his explosiveness, the ability to go downhill, the ability to get side to side and shake people, the guy's explosive first step off the bounce gets him great mid-range looks, gets him to the rim, gets him to defend the rim. Kevin's not old, but he's not necessarily young. He's been in the league 11-12 years. Can he reinvent if he's not the same Kevin Durant? Can he be the same Kevin Durant? You mean, we can list off players that have had Achilles injuries that that was it. Barkley, Marino, Kobe. I mean, go down the list. Those guys all suffered. They were much older, but they all suffered that region injury, that Achilles, and your nails with the surgeries. And I remember, I think it might have been Liz Frank or something like that, where, I mean, KD's
Jones,
had
Jones fracture.
Thank you. So Jones fracture, I mean, that stuff has poor blood supply anyway, that part of the foot.
Right.
So you're talking about going under the knife 3 times in 6 months. You're probably overcompensating that part of your leg because of the previous surgeries. Yeah. I mean, is he going to be what next year if he's with Golden State, or a year and a half after the recovery? Even the free agent market, maybe he goes to the Knicks. I don't know. But can he be an MVP again?
Well, there's never, maybe because he's that good, but there's never been anyone outside of maybe, I mean, there might have been one or two. Who was it? Did Dominique come back? Someone.
He came back for about a year or two. Dominique Wilkins did.
Okay. There have been a couple of people who have come back and been close to what they were, but for the most part, the answer is no. He'll have to create some things separately that can bring new effectiveness to his game, which I just don't see. You're not going to be the 100% guy. So we're not going to see that same guy. He's still so valuable that those teams are still willing to sign him for the max, and maybe not having the entire season, or likely at least for half or two-thirds the season. But no, I don't think he will ever be the same. And it's crazy to believe that, because this was easily avoidable. No, what you're saying is all true, and it's just an absolute it's an absolute game.
Dean Blevins with us, Newsnight in Oklahoma City, Sports Animal, and at Dean Blevins on Twitter is where you follow him. What do you believe with the drama around Durant? You had his mother on Twitter. You've got Katie burner accounts. We've established that he's very sensitive. Do you think he's fit in well with his teammates? Do you think his teammates like him? Where are you with this drama? Is it made up, or is he a different personality to deal with?
No, he's a different personality, but I do believe that they do like him, and they realize that he's the difference maker. This team isn't as strong as it was in the past. Some of these guys are aging. Some of them are gone. And so they need him to be special and to be champions. And his latest sparring, of course, is with some 14-year-old online who it doesn't even matter what he or she said, but that's how far he's gone. And I tell you what, Chris, I really believe that at the root of this horrible decision, ultimately made by him mm-hmm. to come back and play, ultimately, I think it goes to the core of his insecurity. And he believed, in my opinion, that he could reverse all of this horrible talk out there that's been, hey, they can win without you, they don't need you, because here they were down 3-1, and I believe in KD's mind, he's thinking, you know what? I can come back, we'll win this one, we'll win the next one, we'll win the next one, we'll win the championship, and I'll prove to them that I'm the guy. I believe that that's at the core of this problem, that sensitive thinking on his part. I truly believe that that's at the core of this.
Got to be the hero, Dean, right? That mindset?
Right, right. And how silly is that? Golly. And you keep hearing what he wants to go off to another place and he'll really be happy when this XYZ happens. He ain't going to be happy, Chris, until something outside of basketball changes with him. I mean, that's not going to change, you know?
I don't disagree with you. He wants the credit, but not the risk, man. That's just kind of where he's at. All right, let's talk game six. You've seen Toronto when they visited OKC. You've seen Golden State for years in some classic playoff battles. Can Golden State survive another game? Can they pull off the unthinkable? Or is it a guy you're familiar with too, Kawhi Leonard? Does he put him down once and for all tomorrow night?
I think that Toronto's best chance is tomorrow night. I think if they go to a game seven, having given back two games and then having seen the Warriors overcome the loss of Durant in such a dramatic fashion and then be able to beat them in this past game, and then if they lose game six, I don't think they'll be able to handle the pressure in game seven. So I think it's do or die here. I do believe that they will play freer in this game, and I just think that they are the better team right now. So I expect them to end this series in game six. They're just better. The home court advantage is there. But I just think in the end, they have more defensive ability. They have Kawhi is special. And I just don't think the horses are there. You know, you're going to depend on a Boogie to give you something special. And I don't think that he can go back-to-back and be as productive. And, you know, are you going to bank on Iggy being there to knock down that three again? I just don't see it. My money would be on Toronto in game six.
Dean Blevins with us, Hail Varsity Radio at Dean Blevins. Dean will end on some recruiting, a battle for JUCO defensive tackle Perrion Winfrey. He's about an hour away at Iowa Western Community College. Oklahoma, Bama, Florida State, LSU, Nebraska. What are you hearing about Winfrey and the Sooners?
I'm hearing that Oklahoma really, really wants him because as of this date, they only have two commits, standing NFL caliber, cornerbacks, and I don't know that both of them are going to stick with their commitments. So they bring in Alex Grinch, this coordinator. He brings in two more coaches. They've got to turn it around, and they're not getting anyone at this point. They have to find a cornerstone. They have to find someone that not only on the field can help them build back to the typical Oklahoma Standard defense, but someone that they can recruit around. So they're throwing everything, all the eggs in one basket with this guy. They feel really good about it, but have you ever talked to a coach, Chris, anyone on a staff, and asked them how they feel about a guy, and they told you anything but feel great about it?
Never feel great until it's signed.
Yeah. But anyway, they feel good about it. I just see at the end of the day Oklahoma having trouble, not as much necessarily with Nebraska. If he doesn't go to OU, I certainly hope he goes to Nebraska. But I just think it's going to be so difficult, even if he doesn't take a trip to Alabama and LSU, but especially if he does, to sit across the table from Nick Saban and Nick Saban say, look at this defense. Just look at the first quarter of our game against them. Let's look at the NFL. Here are the hard facts, you know, about how you go straight from there to the NFL. I think it's going to be really difficult for Oklahoma, even if they do get the commit, which I think that they are going to get. I think it'll be very difficult for them to hold on to him. But he's extraordinarily important to them, and he looks like the real deal.
Very, very talented. And OU, you mentioned where they're at with the defensive tackles. Bama has 5 committed. Florida State has 8. LSU with 5.
Wow.
And I think it says that OU has 7 defensive tackles as well. Nebraska has 3 right now.
Yeah.
So another OU Nebraska battle. We'll see who takes it. Dean, enjoy your week. Thanks for the insight on KD, and always fun to talk with you.
Okay, Chris. Take care. Have a great day.
There he was, Dean Blevins on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Coming up next, got some jock talk. You're not going to want to miss it.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert. Dr. Brandon, a lot of fun hanging out, seeing you at the Lincoln Orthopedic Open out at Wilderness. Great times. My man, you've got that straight and narrow shot down, man. Way to tee off.
You just got to adjust it just right to play into that slice. Then it goes where you want it.
You've been watching Caddyshack. I love it. You just play the curve. Tough to watch on game 5 with Kevin Durant. We have done a lot of jock docs over the years on Kevin Durant with Liz Frank, with this calf injury about a month ago, this strained right calf. And now you have an Achilles injury to Durant. Dr. Brandon, let's spend some time on Durant, specifically that right lower leg. 3 surgeries, 6 months between 2014 and 15 on his foot. Then you have the calf issue, and now you have the slow-mo footage that's going to make so many cringe to see. Was this just a compromised part of his body? Kind of take me through your diagnosis of Durant, what you saw, and what led up to this. Was this preventable?
Yeah, you know, again, it's such a tough balance. We've had a couple of good conversations about this injury, you know, this one acutely in particular with the calf injury. And, you know, this really is the risk with these, is having a calf injury like that and a pretty high-grade one that they, you know, kind of been talking about leading up to this, is, you know, that is the risk when you go back, is having a full-on, you know, muscle rupture or tendon rupture with this injury, which is what appears to have occurred, you know, last night when you watch that video and kind of all the reports that are out there, you know, as a full-on, you know, Achilles tear. But, you know, you asked the question about the other injuries confounding this he's had previously. You know, is this a compromised extremity? To that extent, you know, sure, that probably played into this, to an extent. But also just having a number of injuries that he has, it does beg the question of, is this a guy that maybe has a little bit of a collagen defect, maybe a little bit of some laxity in his tissues that lends itself to more of these types of injuries? A lot of these high-level athletes kind of walk that fine line of, you know, having a little extra elasticity or flexibility, if you will, that makes them a little bit faster than other athletes. That's what allows them to, you know, separate themselves out. But it's always a fine line. You cross a little bit on the other side of that, and then you start to have an ACL tear, an Achilles injury, some other type of ligamentous injury. And so he's probably one of those that kind of fits into that category, which, you know, puts him more at risk for having these kind of injuries. But in the big scheme of things, you know, that's always the big debate with these is, you know, when do you let these folks go back and play? And it's a tough question to answer.
Well, and when you look at the Warriors doctors and you look at the general manager crying a couple of nights ago, was this a possible ripple effect from a unhealed injury? I mean, it had been 30-plus days since the calf strain. Is there a relation to a calf strain and then an Achilles tear?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there absolutely is, on a couple of levels. One, the level of just being able to have enough time to rebuild that strength up in the surrounding muscles to take some of that force off that area where basically the Achilles tendon kind of meshes with the muscle. We call that the musculotendinous junction. And so there needs to be some time there where that can, one, develop some kind of scarring in that area, some thickening of that tissue, but also a redevelopment of the muscles in the area to make up for that compromised area. And so there's that part of it. And then, you know, the second part of this is ultimately, even with having a calf strain and you get everything back to built where it needs to be, there still is a slightly increased risk of having an Achilles injury once you have kind of that calf strain injury. And that risk is always there. Over time, it goes down, but it's probably never zero. As compared to, you know, say, the normal population would be, or at least back to the normal population's risk of that happening. And so definitely, you know, a setup to have further, Achilles problems in the future, worst of which would be, you know, complete Achilles rupture, which this appears to have occurred.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Kevin Durant, the Achilles injury, and what's next for KD. With his health and with his explosiveness, the ability to go side to side, also north and south, get downhill, pull up from mid-range, drill the three, finish at the rim, he's a fantastic athlete, great player in the NBA. What's his recovery timeline look like with this injury? And what are some of the hurdles with this injury when it comes to recovery?
Yeah, good questions. You know, it's a journey. You know, the rehab on these and the recovery on these is a long road. You know, before you kind of even jump into the recovery part, there might be a little bit of debate in terms of, okay, what do we do to fix him? So let's say, for example, this ends up being a complete Achilles tear, which is what it's appearing to be at this point. Do you do surgery on it? Do you not? 10 years ago, that answer is easy. Yes, you do surgery. There's been a lot more studies put out lately about what if you treat the Achilles ruptures non-operatively. The big fear there always initially was the Achilles heals fairly well, but the re-tear, re-rupture risk with treating it non-operatively is always significantly higher than if you were to fix it surgically. The increased risk of that happening in the future, this re-rupture risk, with some of the newer studies that have been put out there, that number has come down some, enough so that we're starting to see kind of a big shift in patients actually choosing to do more of a non-operative Achilles treatment route, which is very reasonable. The hard part of all that, though, in all of that is a lot of those studies kind of take all comers, you know, sedentary people, reasonably active people, and athletic people. And so the question is, what do you do for an NBA basketball player or somebody of that caliber? You know, there's not a bunch of huge studies out there to show surgery versus not surgery. And so that is one of, you know, maybe one piece of this conversation is, you know, where does that end up? I would assume he's probably going to end up on the surgery side. I still think there'd be some real caution with choosing a non-operative route for somebody at that level. At any rate, that's one debate they'll have. But from that, the recovery, you know, goes to a point of, you know, this is a good kind of year recovery. Obviously, getting back to a level of, you know, high-level competition, feeling comfortable. He feels like he's at a close to his previous levels, probably 18 months, year and a half at least. And then the question becomes, an athlete that's as versatile as him and has the game that he has, being able to elevate, go to the rim, this is going to change him. You know, he might become more of a jump shooter type as opposed to, you know, going to the rim more. It might slow him down some. And these injuries, you know, there's been a good number of people that have made it back from these, but there's also a lot more patients who did not make it back to that level after an injury like this. And so that definitely is on the radar, too, especially with this, you know, free agency stuff coming up. Is there's a chance he may not ever get back.
As I say, will he ever be the same? And, Dr. Brandon, I just think of the Achilles injury, how it ended Kobe's career. It ended Charles Barkley's career. It ended Dan Marino's career. When you mix age and severity, it's just tough to take. Katie will play again. We just don't know if he'll be the same or not, and may have to change his game. And it was pretty tough to see the other night. Dr. Brandon, great to get caught up. Thanks for your insight and input on Kevin Durant.
Absolutely. Take care, Chris.
Good stuff there, Chris. Has left early for the day, so it's going to be Will Bauer and I winding down your Wednesday when we come back.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you one last time. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. If you can tell, this is not Chris Schmidt. Chris Schmidt leaving early, going to go take care of some family matters with his son. Got to take him to basketball.
Oh, so, you made that sound so serious. It's
yeah,
a basketball
I know.
game.
But it is Will Bauer and Elijah Herbel winding it down. You can find Will Bauer on Twitter at Willie_Bauer. Follow him or follow me at Herbel_Essences. And we're going to talk about one of Chris's favorite subjects while he's gone, soccer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Do you think he would? Okay, so two Saturdays ago, somehow soccer got brought up. You were really excited about Champions League.
Champions League
like
final. My team, Tottenham, was playing, and it was a big day for me, and I wore my soccer jersey.
And poor Schmitty had to sit through Brandon Vogel and you talking about it on a Saturday morning, nice and bright and early, and he hated it. He was banging his head against the wall.
Now he gets to listen in his car on the way to his son's basketball game. Call in, Schmidt, if you have anything to say. But Women's World Cup yesterday, United States winning 13-0. Will, do you think it was too much?
It's a tough one to say. I don't think you can't limit a team because they're playing well, you know. I think Alex Morgan said it best. I don't know if it was today or after the game, but she told ESPN that, hey, it's disingenuous for us not to play our best. You know, that wouldn't be fair to the Thai team, the Thai players. So we got to do what we got to do, and if that's a 13-0 game, sorry, but it happens. And I mean, yes, you got to be. You don't need to be a jerk at the end, but
I think some of the celebrations were over the top. 13-0. If you don't follow soccer, that's just absurd.
It is.
The highest scoring game average in the Women's World Cup was 1999. They averaged a little over 3 goals a game.
Yeah, 3.84.
Thanks, Will. We'll come in with the stats.
And then, so if you want to compare that to NFL, NFL averaged in 2018, I believe, 48.4 points in a combined game. And when you compare that, that would be like an NFL game with a total point score of like 168. So it's just nuts.
168-0.
168-0, or combined, you know, maybe a Big 12 shootout.
The difference with World Cup soccer is that in the group stage, goal differential matters. The more you win by, the more it matters by. If you tie a team in points, it's 3 points for a win, 1 point for a tie, and 0 points for a loss.
That's a good point. And so that really sets him up.
If you get to the end of the group stage and you're tied with somebody else, it comes down to whoever has the higher goal differential. So having a plus 13 goal differential through one game is huge for the U.S. So I don't think you never let your foot off the brake whenever that's the case. However, I will say celebrating whenever you're already up 12-0, not necessary. You're playing semi-pros. That Thai team is legitimately semi-pros.
Yeah, and I think they felt that, or at least they were definitely criticized for that. But I think they would say, well, hey, it was the World Cup. We've never been here before. It was super exciting for us. But yeah, I do think it's a fair criticism. You get up that far. Do you really need to act like that when you can clearly tell, oh, hey, this Thai team, they're semi-pros. They're clearly very they're feeling it.
It'd be like Nebraska going up 100-0 on Doan, and we're celebrating the last touchdown. We score with like 2 minutes left in the game. We're all jumping in each other's arms. It's not necessary.
Probably not. Or what did Mike Shuhart say, Weber State or something like that?
Yeah. Wait, nothing against Doan. I'm sorry. It's just there's a difference between NAIA football and Division I football. Well, Hail Varsity for the day. Chris will be back tomorrow. Don't worry.
Won't have to listen to us.
Yeah, won't have to listen to us, despite how good we are. Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery. See you tomorrow.
Jim Rome here with your Rome Report.
According to reports, Kevin Durant flew to New York yesterday for an MRI, and the expectation is